Joe Biden addresses the Democrats' defeat.
I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win.
NATO expresses nervousness about Trump's return to the White House.
I think he likes the idea that he's keeping foreign allies as well as adversaries guessing as to his ultimate intentions. I think he sees that as a source of leverage, as a source of power.
And as the world gathers in Azerbaijan for COP29, politics are on everyone's mind.
Reaching a new financing target just got tougher. President-elect Trump is a vocal climate change skeptic.
Today is Friday, November 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. On Thursday in Washington, President Joe Biden urged Americans to accept the results of Tuesday's presidential election, in which former President Donald Trump defeated Biden's pick, Vice President Kamala Harris. Biden promised to hand power back to Trump, his predecessor, who on January 6, 2021, encouraged his supporters to march on the Capitol and prevent legislators from certifying Biden's 2020 victory. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
President Joe Biden on Thursday promised a smooth transition for his successor, who was also his predecessor, President-elect Donald Trump. He also encouraged unity after the defeat of his preferred candidate, Vice President Kamala Harris.
The people vote and choose their own leaders, and they do it peacefully. And we're in a democracy. The will of the people always prevails.
Trump, in his victory speech a day earlier, also emphasized unity, as he noted the clear rightward shifts among voters that gave him a comfortable win.
They came from all quarters, union, non-union, African-American, Hispanic-American, Asian-American, Arab-American, Muslim-American. We had everybody, and it was beautiful. It was a historic realignment, uniting citizens of all backgrounds around a common core of common sense.
4 years earlier, Trump refused to accept his election loss to Biden. He stood by while an angry mob of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol while the election was being certified on January 6, 2021. Biden on Thursday drew a contrast.
We accept the choice the country made. I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree.
Biden also said he hoped to put to rest questions about the integrity of the American electoral system.
It is honest, it is fair, and it is transparent. And it can be trusted, win or lose.
Trump's second inauguration happens January 20th, 2025. Anita Powell, VOA News, The White House.
European leaders congratulated Donald Trump on his election victory, despite nervousness in some European capitals over what the coming 4 years may deliver for transatlantic relations.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer was among the first to send congratulations, saying he looked forward to working with Trump in the years ahead and that the relationship between the UK and US will continue to prosper.
NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said he looked forward to working with Trump again to advance peace through strength through NATO. An alliance, Rutte said, that helps advance U.S. interests, multiply American power, and keep Americans safe. But analysts say Europe is braced for a possible trade war, and there are growing fears that Trump could cut military aid to Ukraine, leaving Europe more vulnerable. From London, Henry Ridgewell reports.
Donald Trump made a historic comeback in Tuesday's U.S. presidential election.
America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate.
U.S. allies in Europe are pondering what the future president will do with that mandate. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer got off to a difficult start after the Trump campaign criticised his Labour Party officials for offering advice to Trump's rival, Kamala Harris, on the campaign trail. Starmer was quick to send his congratulations.
We live in probably more volatile world than we've lived in for many decades. It is absolutely crucial that we have a strong relationship, that strong special relationship.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said things would be very different with Trump in the White House, but pledged to remain a reliable transatlantic partner.
This also applies with regard to the threat that all NATO allies believe Russia poses to security in the Euro-Atlantic area.
Trump has criticized U.S. support for Ukraine as it fights Russia's invasion. And there are fears he could end military and financial aid for Kyiv. In his first term, Donald Trump threatened to pull the United States out of NATO, claiming allies were taking advantage of the U.S. But in a statement Wednesday, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said that Trump had, quote, turned the tide on European defense spending, improved transatlantic burden sharing, and strengthened alliance capabilities. Meanwhile, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban made no secret of his preference for a Trump victory. When it came, he said, quote, for the world, it means the hope of peace. French President Emmanuel Macron and Donald Trump have had a volatile relationship, but Macron said Wednesday he was ready to work together, quote, with your convictions and mine, with respect and ambition, for more peace and prosperity. In reality, European allies are preparing for a stormy ride, says foreign policy analyst Garrett Martin of American University.
The 4 years where Trump was in office were rather tumultuous. There were moments of constant bickering, a lot of disunity, a lack of cohesion. So I think that was already at a time which was less arguably dangerous than it is now. We're now in the midst of a major war in Europe that's been going on for 2.5 years.
Meanwhile, next week's crucial COP29 climate summit in Azerbaijan is likely to be overshadowed by Trump's victory. The former president pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord in 2017, claiming it was unfair to the United States. His successor, Joe Biden, rejoined on his first day in office. But there are fears Trump will once again quit the agreement, even as scientists warn of catastrophic global warming without immediate action. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
Meanwhile, in Africa, reactions to the election results are also mixed. Some are excited and eager to see what comes next, while others don't expect much from a second Trump administration. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has this report.
On the streets of Nairobi, some Kenyans told VOA Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. election was going to be a good thing for Africa.
I'm expecting a lot to see happening between the two countries, economy-wise. Maybe exchange programs for students and stuff like that.
Eric Mwenda was rooting for Trump's Democratic opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris.
Because she understands the people. I feel like the other one is a bit too racist. He's very mean.
Kenya was the first African country to be elevated recently to the status of a non-NATO U.S. ally by the Biden administration, which also pledged to contribute $300 million to help Kenyan police lead a multinational force in Haiti. Some analysts say they are worried about what Trump will bring. Edgar Githua is an international relations, diplomacy, and security analyst teaching at Strathmore University in Kenya.
He might start releasing executive orders that will resign, for example, Kenya's designation as a NATO non-major ally. He might just scale down on his support on the Haitian post-conflict reconstruction problem. So the $300 million pledged, I don't know how much has been paid so far. You might just find him, growing cold feet and saying that's not his problem and scaling that down.
He says other policies could also shift depending on the country.
Countries like Uganda will benefit because Trump will not really put pressure on them the way the Biden administration put on them because of their LGBTQ+ stand and discourse. But on the flip side, Russia has made strong inroads into the Sahel region and other parts of Africa. Trump is not going to lift a finger to stop the Russians.
Tom Wolf, an independent researcher and political analyst, attended a watch party organized by Democrats abroad in Nairobi. He said that based on Trump's first term, he doesn't think Trump has interest in promoting democracy and human rights on the continent in general, and Kenya in particular. But on the other hand,
in terms of commercial economic competition and encouragement for developing further connections between American and Kenyan businesses, I would expect that to continue.
Also at the watch party, we spoke with Martha Karua, who was the running mate for opposition leader Raila Odinga in Kenya's 2022 general elections. She's also a former member of parliament and justice minister. She remembers Trump's first term, during which he referred to Africa using degrading language.
I have greater hopes in what we can do for ourselves, but he hasn't made very good comments about Africa, calling us names, but it is the responsibility of the leaders in Africa to push for respect and recognition as equal human beings by the partners we work with.
A Trump inauguration is slated for January. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
East Asia is another of the world's hotspots, fraught with political and military tension, even as U.S. allies in the region are congratulating Donald Trump on his decisive victory in the election. Many also worry what the return of his America First foreign policy means for them. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
In his first term as president, Donald Trump mixed high-profile threats with diplomacy as he pursued an unpredictable foreign policy. With Trump now returning to office, U.S. allies and partners in Asia are trying to figure out what America First Round 2 means for them. In South Korea, President Yoon Suk-yeol was optimistic Thursday, saying he and Trump will build a perfect security posture.
We talked about having strong solidarity and partnership in the Asia-Pacific and global region based on the South Korea-U.S. alliance.
Many in Seoul are concerned Trump could strike a deal with North Korea, possibly without consulting the South. Trump has also continued to push South Korea to pay much more to host U.S. troops, leading many in Seoul to question just how committed Washington is to its defense. Japan has similar worries, although Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba called his first talks with Trump very friendly. Ishiba's ruling party last month suffered a major election defeat. If he survives as prime minister, some fear a weakened Ishiba could have trouble pushing back on Trump's demands. Tomohiko Taniguchi is a Tokyo-based political analyst.
To deal successfully with Mr. Trump, you need to be strong. You need to be well endowed with your political capital. And that's the thing that the Japanese leaders, Ishiba, whoever, cannot show and cannot have.
In Taiwan, the government insisted its ties with the U.S. remain rock solid. But it also warned China may try to test the new U.S. president through continued military intimidation of the island. Trump has sent mixed messages on Taiwan, complaining it steals U.S. manufacturing jobs and should pay if it wants U.S. protection. There are also widespread concerns about Trump tariffs and how an expanded U.S.-China trade war would affect the region. Overall, many in Asia expect a shift away from a values-based diplomacy under President Joe Biden towards something more transactional under Trump. What exactly that looks like is not clear. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. Israel's parliament has passed a law that would allow it to deport the family members of Palestinian attackers to the war-ravaged Gaza Strip. The law passed on Thursday was championed by members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's conservative Likud party and his far-right allies.
Germany's leader is expected to lead the country with a minority government after the collapse of the coalition. Chancellor Olaf Scholz fired Finance Minister Christian Lindner of the pro-business Free Democrats in a late-night move on Wednesday. Then two other ministers of the Free Democrats Party also resigned, causing the governing coalition's collapse.
Nigeria's major cities, including Abuja, Lagos, and Kano, have suffered blackouts as the country's electricity grid has collapsed in the 10th such outage this year. Grid failures are common in Nigeria, where the power industry suffers from a lack of investment. Nigeria has the potential to generate 13,000 megawatts, but can only transmit 4,000 megawatts due to weak infrastructure. Not enough for a population of more than 200 million people.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. Back to American politics now. Americans voted for members of Congress along with the president this past Tuesday. Republicans won control of the U.S. Senate, a major victory that will give President-elect Donald Trump a key tool for enacting his legislative agenda. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Washington.
For the first time in 4 years, Republicans have won a majority in the U.S. Senate. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
This is certainly a happy day for the GOP.
Republicans secured their expected wins in the key swing state of Pennsylvania. U.S. Senator-elect David McCormick.
It looks like we're headed in a very good direction.
And in Texas, Democrat Colin Allred failed to beat Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
I will fight for you, for your jobs, for your safety, and for your constitutional rights.
All 435 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives were also up for re-election, with Republicans expected to hold on to their control of the lower chamber. In the Senate races, Democrats did secure wins in California. U.S. Senator-elect Adam Schiff.
I am committed to taking on the big fights to protect our freedoms and to protect our democracy.
Control of the Senate was decided by a few key races where the outcome was uncertain. Races such as in Ohio and in Montana, where Republican Tim Sheehy beat incumbent Democratic Senator John Tester. With control of the U.S. Senate, Trump will be able to confirm his nominees to the highest court in the land, the U.S. Supreme Court, and has a smoother path to passing his legislative agenda. George Washington University's Casey Burgat.
With a majority for Donald Trump, he can not only confirm his cabinet secretaries without having to get Democratic support, but also sub-cabinet secretaries. There's thousands of appointments to be made within the executive branch, and especially within the courts.
Republicans last controlled both chambers of Congress during the first 2 years of Trump's first term as president in 2017. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
One of the biggest and most immediate challenges Donald Trump will face when he returns to office is Iran. Iran is the financial and military supporter of Hezbollah and Hamas, both of whom are at war with Israel, an ally of the U.S. that Trump has expressed strong support for. During his previous term as president, Trump famously withdrew the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal and ordered a strike in which Iranian military commander Qasem Soleimani was killed. With those challenges as a backdrop, I spoke with Jamal Abdi. He's the president of the National Iranian American Council, or NAIAC. Mr. Abdi, you're the president of NAIAC. It's the National Iranian American Council. And just for our listeners who might not be familiar, can you just let us know who you are and what you do? You don't represent the Iranian government. You don't speak for them. Who do you represent?
We're a grassroots organization, and we represent thousands of Iranian Americans and non-Iranian Americans who favor peace, diplomacy, protecting civil rights, having a voice on issues that impact our community, and I'd say largely having a voice that is progressive.
What do you expect from a Trump administration? What signals have you gotten?
It's really interesting what Trump was saying on the campaign trail. So we know that Trump is sort of an avowed anti-interventionist or even an isolationist. And that was the case even in his first administration. That's not necessarily how things panned out in the Middle East, especially vis-a-vis Iran. He tore up the nuclear deal. He imposed these maximum pressure sanctions and, assassinated Iranian officials, came very, very close to all-out war with Iran. And so the track record is very much the opposite of an anti-interventionist. That being said, on the campaign trail, he's talking about he wants a deal with Iran, much like us. Actually was asked about, purported assassination, or the Iranian threats on his life and, reports that there were plans to try to target him and his former officials. And he sort of said, like us, you got to hold your nose and do a deal because, in his words, the alternative is impossible. So I think that's actually very astute and promising that perhaps he really does want to get to the negotiating table. And even though he tore up the previous deal, actually understands how important it is to have some diplomatic track to avoid military conflict to avoid Iran potentially becoming a nuclear weapon state.
And speaking of negotiations, Iran's support of Hezbollah and Hamas and the ongoing wars in Israel. How do you see a Trump administration dealing with Israel, dealing with Iran vis-a-vis that conflict?
Yeah, I you know, the sense is that Trump wants the war wrapped up before he takes office. And I don't know if he and Netanyahu are on the same page, because that certainly doesn't look like the direction things may be going. I think that ultimately it's the same thing that needs to happen that has not happened under Biden, and that is that there needs to be a ceasefire, and there needs to be a willingness by the Netanyahu government to accept that ceasefire. And I think really the big test is, you know, is Trump going to be able to get Netanyahu to do that, to then clear the way for Trump to pursue whatever it is that he does want to do, whether it is in a, you know, Saudi-Israel normalization, whether it's trying to get to the table with Iran. But the same crux of the matter that has existed under Biden that has been a barrier to any of that is the same for Trump. He needs the Israelis to accept a ceasefire.
Foreign affairs aside, during Trump's previous administration, he signed what is colloquially called the Muslim travel ban. Are you expecting, are you ready for any Islamophobic or anti-Muslim laws or actions coming from a second Trump administration?
We are expecting these types of measures. And Trump himself has, at least early on, said that he would be bringing back the Muslim ban. I think that he would be slamming a door shut if he went in that direction. But I also think that given his rather extreme immigration agenda, that is very much going to be on the table.
Jamal Abdi is the president of NIAC. It's the National Iranian American Council. Mr. Abdi, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your analysis.
My pleasure.
And finally today, we've spent much of this show talking about the global politics of Trump's reelection. Now we'll look at the global climate and how Trump's election is already making climate scientists nervous. Reuters' Alice Rizzo reports.
The stage is set for the UN's climate summit being held in Azerbaijan. But this year's COP29 is also being held in the shadow of Donald Trump's election victory. So what's on the agenda, and what impact will US politics have? COP29 has been dubbed the Climate Finance COP, and the acronym you'll be hearing most is NCQJ. That stands for New Collective Quantified Goal. What it means is the amount of annual funding to help developing countries cope with climate-related disasters. A new target will kick in when the $100 billion pledge, set in Paris in 2015, expires at the end of this year. Wealthy nations have only sometimes met the current target. That's led to growing mistrust among the world's climate-vulnerable nations. COP29 aims for a much higher target for the years ahead. Wealthy nations insist the money cannot come entirely from their budget. Instead, they are discussing a far more complex effort, reforming the global banking system. But reaching a new financing target just got tougher. President-elect Trump is a vocal climate change skeptic.
We're going to drill, baby, drill.
His campaign has already vowed to pull the US, a historic greenhouse gas emitter and a leading oil and gas producer, out of the Paris Agreement for the second time.
With this election result, we really get very concerned that all the talks are now going to be what will happen in the absence of the US and the US not meeting its finance goal or even...
Arjit Singh is a global engagement director for the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty.
That is going to be at the heart of the conversation at COP29.
Other topics will also be discussed. For example, fossil fuels. Last year, countries agreed to, quote, transition away from fossil fuels in energy systems. Since then, however, both fossil fuels use and export sales have continued to rise globally. Governments are also eager to resolve rules for trading carbon credits, which are earned through the preservation of forests and other natural carbon sink. And finally, climate vulnerable nations are also likely to call on wealthy nations to offer more for a newly created loss and damage fund. It was established to help poorer countries cover the costs of climate-driven disasters like extreme floods, storms, and drought.
That's Alice Rizzo of Reuters reporting for us. And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope. Thanks for listening.